Well, welcome. We're so glad that you're here sitting down with John. One of the things that you could do for us as we go through this whole live stream is just be active in the chat because we can see it. We want to interact with you. I'm going to be asking John some questions, going to be asking you questions. And then one other thing is we've created a post-series survey, and we would love to invite all of you to participate in that survey, which just helps us learn how we did in this series, how we can make things better, and learn a little bit more about you, our community. So you can just go to BN, that stands for Become New, feedback.com, and that will take you right to the survey that you can take. You could even fill out that survey while you're watching today. But John, thanks so much for leading us through this subject and content, which seems to be right at the center of the cultural zeitgeist of topic and conversation. I feel like every YouTube video I see or social media reel is about AI or technology. What's going to happen? Is it going to be this utopia or this dystopia or some combination of both or nothing? So thanks for leading us through this topic, and I'd love to just kind of turn it over to you for general thoughts as we're wrapping up.
It's been a really, really rich conversation, very rich subject to think about, read about. I don't know that we've done any series so far that has had more wonderful conversations with a bunch of folks. So I'm really grateful. And actually, Tim and a lot of folks on the team were saying, you know, we've really got to talk about this. We need this in our spiritual lives. We need it for wisdom. We need it as parents and with kids in our lives because they're facing a world that's fundamentally different than ours. And I was just reading this article most recently, but every day there's tons being written on this. This is by an author named Mary Harrington. She's a journalist in the UK. And the title is Thinking is Becoming a Luxury Good. Here's part of what she writes. Since intelligence tests were invented around a century ago, until recently, international IQ scores climbed steadily in a phenomenon known as the Flynn effect. But there is evidence that our ability to apply brain power is decreasing. It's kind of scary. According to a recent report, adult literacy scores leveled off and began to decline across the majority of countries in the past decade, with some of the sharpest declines visible among the poorest. Kids also show declining literacy. Writing in the Financial Times, John Byrne Murdoch links this to the rise of a post-literate culture in which we consume most of our media through smartphones, eschewing desk-tensed text in favor of images and short-form video. And this also gets associated with attention deficit disorder. It's interesting how that's kind of exploded as a phrase. You know, when you think about it, the ability to focus our attention is just fundamental to human beings. And our problem generally begins with our mind and where our attention goes. Paul writes to the church at Rome in Romans 12, don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of our minds. And that's a huge problem. Thank God for technology. It's such a gift. If it weren't for that, we would not be able to meet like this right now. And at the same time, when we just get ensnared by it, which is very easy to do, there is evidence that it's actually damaging our minds. And one more paragraph from Mary's article. Interestingly, the very act of reading scarcely seems necessary. Platforms like TikTok, YouTube Shorts offer a bottomless supply of enthralling short-form videos. These, combined with visual memes, fake news, real news, clickbait, sometimes hostile misinformation, and increasingly a torrent of AI-generated slop content. The result is a media environment that seems like the cognitive equivalent of the junk food aisle and is every bit as difficult to resist as those colorful, unhealthy packages. So to be able to think today about the unique challenge in our day, how do we use these little screens to be a blessing to other people and to be blessed by God and connect with people, but then have the freedom so that we're able increasingly to direct our minds to think and focus about. We're going to be doing a series coming up in Philippians, and part of what Paul writes in the fourth chapter is whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. and to have minds that are increasingly able to do that, that's life. And that's the ability that often gets lost. So, Tim, I'm super grateful to you and the team for even suggesting this topic and for the journey it's been.
Yeah. That there's a lot of interesting content in that article that you just read, which I want to ask some things about that. But as I'm just thinking, as you look back on this series, John, were there any moments that were surprising to you as you were walking through the content in conversations or even from how you heard people were responding? I know you were traveling and speaking some, you would run into people that are part of the Fellowship of the Withered Hand, is what we call this community. Yeah, anything as you look back on this series that you found to be surprising?
We've been going now for, I think it's been about 5 years, 4.5 years. And so increasingly, when I'll travel and speak someplace, to talk with people who are connected is a great joy. Most often, somebody might come and say, I'll listen to Become New, or I heard you talk to this person on the show, because we still don't quite know what to call it. But then there'll be some folks that will stop and say, I'm part of the Fellowship of the Withered Hand. And that's taken from that story where there's a man in the synagogue with a withered hand. And ironically, paradoxically, when Jesus has him stand up and be open about his greatest need and place of shame, then power and healing flows. And anytime somebody says that, I'm a part of the Fellowship of the Withered Hand, I know we're going to have a conversation that just gets to a deeper level than usual. I'm very grateful for that. And that's happened a lot through this series, where people will talk about both the joy of technology, but then the way it just gets a hold of me. So a couple of surprise points. The conversation with Royce Branning and his app, ClearSpace, I did not know that those kind of resources were available. And so I've downloaded that app and invited my buddy Rick to be in relationship over what our screen lives are like. And I think we may just review briefly Andy Crouch's 10 TechWise commitments, but that one about accountability is one of them. So that was very cool. Also, I love the conversation with Pat Gelsinger. And if anybody is watching this, you may know Pat was with Intel. Lots going on in the field of technology. Lots going on with Intel right at the moment when I'm saying this. And I love Pat's vision for recognizing, on the one hand, yes, like any other human attainment or accomplishment or resource or tool, technology can do damage, but it's also a great gift and it has the potential to do great things. And that thought that we are in a Gutenberg moment, and that just as the invention of the printing press was used by God in remarkable ways for the spread of scripture and the news of Jesus and wonderful thoughts to be available to people, we're in another moment where technology can do that, and people of goodwill, people who follow Jesus, ought to plunge into the field of technology and help us figure out how can we lever it most deeply. Andy, in his little book, The Life We're Looking For, talks about how there was actually warnings way back in the days of the ancient Greeks, in Plato's day, about how writing was going to do all kind of damage, because once you can write stuff down, you don't have to remember anymore. So people's memories are going to get much worse. So always, from the invention of writing, technology is a mixed bag, and it's meant that we have to think carefully about both the negative side, but also what are ways in which it's going to be great and be a blessing. And so that conversation with Pat, I thought, was really stimulating.
Yeah. I found both of those conversations particularly inspiring. I think that it's so easy to gravitate toward the negative of technology because there's so much unknown. It's kind of this wild frontier. And when we don't have, when we don't know about a topic or an area, we tend to fill it in with, I think, doom and gloom. So it was nice to hear about some people that are just like rolling up their sleeves. And I felt inspired by that. I think that, yeah, what would it look like to use technology to go after the things that God cares about the most? And I think about the most vulnerable in society. There's just ways that we could advance or take ground that we couldn't do otherwise, which kind of leads me back to this article that you just read about with the illiteracy, right? If we're just, we're developing a culture that's depending so much on AI, do you have any suggestions or thoughts around how to keep the saw sharp? You know, is that even important when it comes to helping the next generation to keep some of these fundamental skills of reading and writing?
One thing, like, Tim, I know your own experience has been kind of an interesting journey with the kind of phone that you use and that you don't use. And folks will ask you about that sometimes. So if you don't mind, tell a little bit about what your practice is there.
Yeah. Well, about 4 years ago, I made the decision to switch off of a smartphone to what's called a light phone. So this was actually, this was my phone right here, about the size of a business card, for the last 4 years. And they just came out with a new model that's this, so it's like the size of a wallet. But yeah, people are always curious about this when I'm pulling it out or I meet someone new. Like, I was talking with our neighbor just down the street here the other day, and I was like, oh, let me get your contact. And I pulled it out and they're like, what is that? But basically, it's a light phone that does some essential functions, like it has directions, it has a little camera, integrates with my calendar, music, podcast, but there's no internet or apps. So for me, about 4 years ago, I just hit a place where I was really, I would say, unhealthily prioritizing digital relationships and needed to prioritize my real life relationships. And even to the point where friends and family were noticing that I was on my phone a lot. And before being with Become New, I was an online church pastor at a sizable church. And so I was spending all day, every day on technology and social media and all that. And clearly I still work with technology regularly because that's all we do here at Become New is connect with people that way. But I made the decision to switch and actually deleted all of my social media and went full send into this light phone life. And initially it was really challenging. It was, I was depressed. I felt disconnected. I had major FOMO, like, oh my gosh, I'm not able to see what's happening with this random person from college that I used to talk to and I haven't talked to in 5 years, you know? There was definitely, I think, like a dark plunge into it. And then slowly it became just so liberating and freeing. It actually makes me, I was thinking about it, makes me feel like when you're a kid, you know, and you're so present to the people around you and the world around you, and that kind of feels like the extent of your possible, you know, world, relationships, opportunity. And that is a home base for me. Just feels so much, how that being on something like this isn't really feasible for a lot of folks whose jobs are so integrated with their iPhone or their Android. But for me, it's been a huge gift. And multiple times I've talked with my wife about moving back to a smartphone. And she's like, do you want to go back to like an iPhone or something? And I'm actually to a place where I just don't. I'm just really happy with it.
So an interesting question would be for all of us to think about. Does anybody ever tell you, you look at that screen too much, you're paying too much attention to your phone? And we could just do a true confession time right now on chat. And it could be never if nobody ever does, or it could be sometimes. When I was talking with Rick Blackman, one of the comments that he made was he will hear more often husbands complain about that with their wives than wives complain about that with their husbands. A lot of interesting feedback on that one. I think Rick's on right now. One of them was from a wife who just raised the issue, which has become a huge one in our day, of porn and porn addiction, and how, you know, one of the challenges that people face in our day is now a whole world of porn and just hyper-sexualized content is available. We carry it around in our pockets. And that can be a problem for men or women, but particularly is for men. So I thought that was a really important and really valid point. And one of the statements in Philippians, which we're going to go through in our next series, Paul is praying for the Philippians. It's very interesting what he prays for them. And it's really for their love, but in particular, that their love would be able to discern what is best. And so being able to discern not just what's bad from what's good, but what's pretty good from what's best. can be kind of tricky. And so asking, is my use of technology producing the best results in my life? Is it making me feel more alive? Is it making me feel more surrendered to God? Is it putting me more in touch with what is good and what I'm able to learn and being able to relate with other people more effectively? And to the extent that it is, then great, keep going. But recognize that often the easy path in outsourcing our consciousness, outsourcing our minds to technology is the easy path often keeps us from what's best. And I think of Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi's research on flow, he talks about how the country that's produced more poets per capita than any other country in the history of the human race is Iceland. And you think about, why would that be the case? And it's because in Iceland, you know, at night they would just sit around fires or those little geothermal heat spas that come up out of the ground and recite epic sagas, and they would memorize them because they had nothing better to do. In the ancient world, people tended to have much more developed memories than we do just because they had nothing better to do. They had no shows to watch. They had no screens available. So it was kind of fun to them. And just recognizing, because this is the easiest way to outsource managing my thoughts, my consciousness, doesn't mean it's the best way. And asking that question, what's the best form of life for me to become the person God wants me to be, is always a useful one.
Yeah, there's definitely a, I don't know what you would call it, but there's like a hump you have to get over of boredom or stillness to enter into that place where your mind can start to dream or wonder or think. I don't know if it was on your podcast, another one that I was listening to, that basically the biggest remedy, the best remedy for boredom is curiosity. And just that idea that we need to stay curious about our world. And I think personally, and you could maybe give me some advice on this, John, I never quite know how to talk about my light phone or my choices around social media technology, because I don't want anyone to feel bad about what they're doing, what their choices are. They're not the same as mine. But I do think for me, moving away from social media and the smartphone in my pocket has given me so many more opportunities to get over that little hump into creative dreaming and thinking and wonder and being fully present to the people around me.
I think the quote was Dorothy Parker, and I think it was, the cure for boredom is curiosity. There is no cure for curiosity. And
yes.
I just thought that was so wonderful. So every parent knows that with little kids, when they complain, I'm bored. That's a key moment in parenting and learning to say, well, that's a serious problem. What are you going to do about that? How are you going to deal with that?
Yeah. And I told my 9-year-old that the other day, like, oh, hey, buddy, if you're bored, just get curious. He didn't like it.
Yeah. But it's much easier to say that to my kids than it is to say it to myself. So learning to tolerate boredom and figuring out how do I not simply run from it, but try to enter into a deeper, richer way of life. Dallas Willard would always talk about, very frequently talk about, how the ultimate greatest human freedom is, where will we place our minds? And of course, boredom is posing precisely that problem. Where will I place my mind? And to have a mind that is rooted in what is true and noble and right, in God and God's goodness and creation and learning and joy and looking at other people and being awake to what's happening today. That's the great invitation.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Well, I've got some more questions, unless there's anything else you wanted to share. Prompt list.
Nope, John, fire away.
Do you have anything more?
Fire away.
Okay. This is a question for everybody in the chat and also just for you, John. So the question is, be honest, what app do you open way more than you'd like to admit?
I think what I probably hate to admit is I kind of almost don't know enough about apps to be able to comment on that a whole lot. I think, I'll just go into Google and sometimes Google the news aimlessly. So that's probably an area where if I'm just bored, you know, then I will want to do that. So that would probably be the main one. Other than that, I'm not on social media for the most part. And so that's not something that I'll do a lot. I have an Aura ring, and so I'll look to see how did I sleep last night. But I'm trying to think through. I don't think there's any particular apps that I'm on a lot.
Yeah. We've got one person in the chat, SB, who's, I think, might get the award for the most holy. Their answer is the Bible app.
Ah. So
that's a pretty good app.
I don't know about that one. Yeah.
All right. Here's another, just a quick hitter lightning round here. What's one thing that you've done offline lately that's brought you joy? So for everyone in the chat, but then also just for you, John.
You know, I think the biggest one for me, and it sounds kind of oddly paradoxical, but just in going through difficulties and pain, and I'll look on here and see folks that are also, and it recurs in my life, our life, to have conversations with other people who are going through something deep, and often it might be a family issue. It might be a child that is going one direction or another. It might be a health issue. I have a friend that I worked with years ago, and he just passed away a couple of days ago. So I've been talking with his family about how they will go through this and what will happen next there. I had lunch yesterday with a guy who is was talking about in his own spiritual and emotional life, hitting a very difficult point, losing his job, facing a real difficult relationship. And he said he was a high school football player. And the image that came to his mind in searching for God, he's also been deeply impacted by Dallas Willard, was he was a lineman. And when he would practice blocking on the sled, where you just got to bang it as hard as you can and bang it as hard as you can, banging as hard as he can. And he said it would be like that, thinking, I gotta find God. And there was something about that conversation together with him where he was describing his own journey. And I didn't play football, so I didn't have that experience, but that picture resonated so deeply with me. I called Nance up and said, you know, she said, yeah, that's what life has been like. So having conversations with people that hit that level, I know it, because it involves pain, it doesn't sound real joyful, but there is a real deep meaning and joy attached in it to me. And I'm super grateful for that.
Oh, it's beautiful. Thanks, John, for sharing that. Some answers from the chat. Terry Factuar says slip and slide with my grandbabies. Gail says I feed birds and squirrels in our backyard. Yep. They love peanuts. Driving to another town and spending the morning just hanging out, sitting next to a lake, from Irene. Billy says snorkeling with a dear friend. Chris Pierce, evening walks in the sunset. That's beautiful. Okay, one more question, which will, I think, lead into something you wanted to share about, John, which is that you shared a lot about the 10 TechWise mm-hmm. commitments.
Yep.
Andy Crouch. Is there one that you personally found the hardest to stick with? And why? And then this is also for you in the chat. We'd love to hear how that went. Did you adopt any of those?
Yep. Let me just review them, because I thought these were so helpful. We develop wisdom and courage together as a family. That's number one. We want to create more than we consume. So we fill the center of our home with things that reward skill and active engagement. And one of those things for us is we have a piano, and I have started taking piano lessons again for the first time since I was in eighth grade. And that's kind of a cool thing. We're designed for a rhythm of work and rest. So 1 hour a day, 1 day a week, 1 week a year, we turn off our devices, worship, feast, play, rest together. And that one, I've been doing the hour a day thing. And then we wake up before our devices do, and they go to bed before we do. I've been doing both of those. I don't know yet about 1 week a year. I have not done that one yet, so I got to find out if I'll be able to do that. We aim for no screens before double digits at school and home. I do think in talking with parents of young kids, it's super helpful for groups of parents to connect together. And because the constant complaint of childhood is, this is not fair. Everybody else is doing it. If you make decisions about when a smartphone might be available to my child or so, to be in a community of families with young kids where you are doing that stuff together and able to reinforce it with each other seems like a pretty powerful idea. We use screens for a purpose. We use them together rather than using them aimlessly and alone. That one will take work for me. I think I can often use them alone in a pretty aimless way. Car time is conversation time. Those little kids are captive audience during those moments. Spouses have one another's passwords. Parents have total access to children's devices. We learn to sing together rather than letting recorded and amplified music take over our lives and worship. I do love singing. This is not really one that we're using around the house very much. So number 9 would probably be there. We show up in person for the big events of life. We learn how to be human by being fully present at our moments of greatest vulnerability. We hope to die in one another's arms. That's beautiful. That's a deep one. So, I think that 1 week a year has not happened yet. I have to see how that goes.
Yeah. Number 9 for our family, you know, we love to play music in the kitchen when we're making dinner or hanging out, and we'll dance or sing along to it. So I think that, I don't know. I also, by the way, I've tried to delay my kids on technology. And so we've gotten them both old school iPods. So that's what they get to rock with. But yeah, that's a rule. That's a commitment we didn't take. Curious from you in the chat, if there were commitments that you, adopted. I loved also what Andy Crouch said about that habit, that practice of spend the first thing in the morning, you go outside. And even if you just spend 60 seconds breathing deep, beholding creation, feeling small in the best way, and just sort of calibrating your day to that. I loved that. That was something that I picked up from this series.
Yep. I have been doing that also. Before I look at anything, I step outside.
Beautiful. Well, John, we are concluding this break. We're going to continue to send out links to old episodes because a lot of people really build their devotional life around these morning episodes, which we're just, I think, incredibly flattered by that and grateful that this is helpful for you. But we're going to do a new series starting August 25th about Philippians. Go ahead, John.
Well, I'm just looking at the chat. Rico, 0 out of 10, F minus. I belong here. Man, that is great honesty, Rico. At least you didn't burn down the village. So you got to take comfort in that. Rico knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yep.
Love that. I mean, the commitments are tough. It's a tough thing to do in our world. Tell us about the upcoming series. We're going to dive into Philippians. We've titled the series Shine. It's going to start August 25th. At least that's the working title. I think that'll be.
That's the working title. Philippians is just a fabulous book in the New Testament. And one of the reasons super meaningful for me is I had a very formative teacher, Jerry Hawthorne, who taught New Testament Greek when I was going through college. And he's kind of a Tuesdays with Maury kind of guy, if you're familiar with that book, in my life and the life of a number of friends. And during those days, he was writing what became a classic commentary on the book of Philippians. And that will be the text along with the text of scripture that I'll be walking through. And if you Philippians is just one of those books that has classic line after classic line. He who began a good work in you will carry it through to completion, or that whatever things are true or noble or right, that line is in there. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything in prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, rejoice in the Lord. Again, I will say rejoice to just so many statements. So I think walking through that together and kind of having Jerry as our teacher and our guide as we walk through it. And then thinking, I was just talking with Tim and Jackson and our team about this. How do we take each episode and start with, here's a human problem. And then here's how Paul, in his letter to the church at Philippi, is addressing how another way of life is possible and letting that pay off in our life. How do we actually live that kind of way? Part of what Paul says to the Philippians is, do everything without grumbling or arguing. And then he goes on, so that you will shine like stars in the sky in this dark generation. So that idea, today is your day to shine. Every day, this day, you can bring light. You can. So that's where we're headed. And I'm very excited about that.
Love that. I'm excited about that as well. Just a couple more comments from the chat here. A lot of people are resonating with the wanting to step outside, admitting to that. By the way, mm-hmm. if you'd like help with that, one thing our family did during this series is we got a puppy. There's no more sure way to get you outside first thing in the morning than getting a puppy, because you will want to take that mm-hmm. little thing outside. I'll spare you from what kind of puppy we got, because I don't want to receive any shame or ridicule from John, but we got a puppy. Yeah, other folks are just expressing that the commitments were tough to work on. Do you have any just encouragement, John, for people as we're going into Philippians, as we're going to walk through just this real practical biblical application? How should people leave this series feeling, I mean, so they don't feel discouraged? I know we don't discouraged or sort of defeated in engaging.
Yep, we'll talk about that some in Philippians. Again, the book I mentioned is, it's a commentary. It's just called Philippians by Jerry Hawthorne. I don't probably recommend getting it unless you know Greek. It's based on the Greek text, so it's a little technical in that way. But there'll be other resources on Philippians that we can pass along. So it's very hard for me to think of places in the Bible where God said to people, be discouraged. I don't think that discouragement is an orientation to which God calls us in a sustainable way. And I love that Become New can be a place where, instead of feeling like I have to show how well I'm doing in my spiritual life and here's what I've attained, that I've gotten better at this, and instead of doing this, it's just, you know, me too. No, try to do this. Need God's help. Still a mess without him. I love that we can be that kind of community and want to be that kind of person myself. And I wrestle with discouragement. I can't tell you how often I have to be reminded, particularly when I'm alone and I'm just trying to be with God or talk to God, and where I tend to go by default is my own inadequacy or failure or shame around something. So classic expression that Paul says in his letter to the church at Philippi is, I am confident of this, and we'll talk about confidence, that he who began a good work in you will be faithful to complete it. So his statement is not, I'm confident that you're smart and you're strong and you're devoted and you're committed and so you're going to make it happen. No, no, no. It's not that we're confident in us. It's not self-confidence. It's God confidence. God has begun something. You wouldn't be watching right now. You wouldn't be listening. You wouldn't be thinking about this if God had not started something in your life, planted some desire in your heart to move towards him in goodness and growth. I'm confident that he who began a good work will be faithful to complete it. When? Not today, not tomorrow, not next year, will be faithful to complete it on the day of Christ Jesus, on that day when Jesus comes back to set everything right. And today's not that day yet, so it's too soon to give up. Don't quit. The deadline is that day, not this day. I'm not in charge of the timing. So if God's given me another day, then it's a day not to quit and keep going.
Wonderful. Thank you, John. Thanks for this yep. call and conversation. I've got a few housekeeping things to let people know, and then if you want to give a last farewell, we'll sign off here. The housekeeping stuff is, one, we would love to have you take that survey for the post series, just to give us some insight into how we're doing. So you can go to bnfeedback.com, fill that out. I'll probably send the link out in a text or email in the next day or two. The other is, if you didn't know, you can subscribe to receive text alerts whenever we drop a new video. You can just text the word become to 855-888-0444. And we'll just send you the video link with the title every morning when the new video drops. Some of you don't know, we've heard from folks who don't know, but we send out a daily email with every video that has extra information, resource lists. So if you're looking for the books that John mentions or articles, we link to those in every email. You can also access the video that way. So we encourage you to sign up for those emails if you think that that would be helpful. And then the last thing that I'll just let people know is that prayer is really important for us at Become New. There's a group of us that meet every weekday for 1 hour to pray. And actually, during the Philippians series, we're going to invite everybody from the community, if you want, to join us for a prayer call. So we're actually adding a second time for this series, in case that's helpful, at 7 a.m. Pacific or 12 p.m. Pacific on Zoom. If you want to join for one time a week during this series of Philippians, just to connect with other Become Newers, to pray, to get prayed for, you can join us. And the best way to get that information is actually by filling out that survey, bnfeedback.com. You can let us know that you're interested in that there, and we'll follow up with you. But that prayer hour has been so transformative for my life, John. I even just think about Dallas Willard, the golden triangle of transformation, which is experience, relationship, and habits. Is that right? Did I get that right? Those three things, I experience all of those in this prayer call every day. We're having an encounter with God. We're doing it together. And it's a habit. We built it in. So that's my plug for prayer. You know that I'm really passionate about that. But those are some ways to get connected, to take next steps. And now, John, just any last farewell from you, and then we can
Well, thank you to everybody. Deeply, deeply grateful. Wonderful stuff going on that is just very, very meaningful. To everybody who is part of that little project where we put together that book, Insurmountable, this is kind of fun. I just got this text yesterday. There's a publisher in Germany, and they're going to be doing a German version of the book Steps, but they also want to do a German version of Insurmountable. So I thought that was just really fun that such a kind of small, we just did it very internally project would end up having folks over there who want to translate it. So just, I'm very, very grateful to all of you for this community. My last word will be, somebody in the chat was talking about how I have to wrestle with despair. And I think about that in my own life, especially in the darkest, hardest moments. And so in Paul's second letter to the church at Corinth in chapter 4, he has this series of tensions that he lives with. And he talks about how we are crushed down on every, we are pressed, hard pressed on every side, but not crushed. He says, we're persecuted, but we're not abandoned. We are knocked down, but not knocked out, not destroyed. And then the other one is, we are perplexed, but not in despair. And that's very meaningful to me, to think of Paul being perplexed. Just Paul seems so certain about stuff and so clear. And to think about Paul waking up in the morning, just, I'm perplexed. I don't know. But despair is the orientation that says it's not worth it. My life is not worth it. The effort is not worth it. Nope, don't go there. We don't go there. It's worth it. Whatever the struggle, whatever it is that you're going through, whatever the pain that you're facing, whatever the questions that you don't have answers to, whatever the uncertainty about the future, whether it's in your body or one of your children, or in the work that you're doing, or finances, or a habit or addiction that you can't break, or anxiety or depression that you can't go away, when you just wonder, is it worth it? Yeah, it's worth it. God loves you. He who began a good work will be faithful to complete it. We are perplexed. We are perplexed. We don't pretend to not be perplexed. Just not despair. Thank you, guys. I love you.